Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Congress has an intense week ahead as they look at tax reform, immigration issues, and how to avoid a potential government shutdown. We're spending this hour of In the Moment talking about the GOP tax reform plan. Tax writers from the House and Senate are already in discussions. Key issues that need to be resolved between the House plan and the Senate tax plan include how small businesses are taxed and amending the mortgage interest deduction. No Democrats have voted for the proposals in either chamber. Senate Democrats took to social media this weekend to protest the way they say Republicans pushed the Senate package through before anyone could even read it. Later in the hour, we hear from two economists with different takes on the overall direction of tax reform. But first, Tim Bjorkman is with us. He's a Democratic candidate for the U.S. House. He's hoping to take Congresswoman Kristi Noem's vacated seat when the time comes. Joining me now in the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Tim Bjorkman, thanks for coming back.
Good morning, Lori. It's good to be with you again.
You're following tax reform not only as a South Dakotan, as a citizen, but also as a candidate. Where do you believe, as you look at these policies, they fall short? What do you think, where do you think South Dakotans should be concerned?
Well, it really depends on how you look at it, Lori. If the goal of Congress is to reward their wealthy donors and major corporations by a raid on the U.S. Treasury, it's a pretty good bet they're going to accomplish it with this bill. On the other hand, if, as the House and Senate Republican leaders repeatedly tell us, this is intended as middle-class tax relief, then by that standard it fails miserably. Let me just explain that the truth is that nonpartisan tax experts, including Congress's own Joint Committee on Taxation, tell us that the vast majority of these tax cuts are going to go to corporations, the ultra-wealthy, and their heirs, while many in the middle class and the lower income groups will see their taxes go up. A simple chart on PBS NoonHour shows very clearly what's going to happen under the current law. Those who have adjusted gross incomes of $50,000 and less are going to pay more tax over time. Those who have adjusted gross incomes of $100,000 or more, so they're probably earning salaries of $150,000 and up, are going to see tax gains. The more they earn, the better the tax savings. Those in the middle, from $50,000 to $100,000 of adjusted gross income, they're going to see some modest savings. The question is, will those modest savings offset the added deficits that they and their children and grandchildren are going to have to pay over the coming decades?
How important is it to consider that sense of the deficit? This is not revenue neutral tax reform.
Well, it's not. The budget, the national debt rather, today stands at $20 million, Lori. It's projected over the next decade without any tax reform to go up to $27 trillion. The Joint Committee on Taxation says that even with all the assumptions that the Republican Congress wants to add in here as to dynamic scoring, the deficit is going to balloon under their proposal. $1 trillion or more in the best case.
All right. So traditionally, it seems like there are a lot of budget hawks in the Republican Party, and the Democratic Party has in history been, accused of spending too much or tax and spend. How does this look in 2017 as far as, where are those budget hawks that are saying this deficit is a problem for us?
Well, I think that's a better question probably for our congressional delegation, and I'll let them answer for themselves. In my own life, I know what it's like to run a small business, to make a payroll. We grew up living in a conservative lifestyle. Kay and I raised our kids with conservative practices, and I think that reflects most South Dakotans, and I think that's one of the things that takes so many people, Democrats, Republicans, independents, back, is that they see this as just corporate largesse. And, make no mistake, Wall Street is euphoric. And the market this morning is up big. There's a reason for that. But it's not the reason we might think. They're euphoric because they are pretty sure that companies are going to use these savings not to stimulate the economy and pay higher wages out of the goodness of their hearts, but to buy back stock and boatloads of stock. And by doing that, that's going to beef up dividends and raise stock prices. That's why you're seeing the market go up. So this is a great deal for Wall Street, Lori, not so good for Main Street and for the middle and lower class families who try to make it on very little.
Let's talk about the process a little bit. Democrats have been speaking out this weekend on not being able to really read this entire bill. You gave it a shot. You tried to read it over the weekend. What are your thoughts about the process here?
Yeah, well, yesterday at this time, I had no idea I'd be with you this morning.
And we thank you for the short notice of willingness to come.
I'm glad to be here, Lori. When you asked me to come, one of the first things I did is pulled up that bill. I'd seen little snippets of it. And let me tell you, it's almost 500 pages. There are scribblings along the side. I wanted to bring some this morning and ask if you could read them. These are key provisions, and the tax bill refers to multitudinous other federal tax and other statutes, so that even if you just read those 487 pages or however many there are, you would not know what the effect of that bill is without going and reading the multitudinous other federal tax statutes that are implicated. So to give members of Congress a copy of this bill an hour before they're expected to vote is just really quite breathtaking. Mm. This process from the beginning has lacked the kind of deliberate, thoughtful, transparent effort that we should be able to count on from our own congressional delegation. And you know, Lori, our two senators have an opportunity even now to change the course of this process by telling their colleagues, look, we want to come back home over the Christmas holidays and listen to our constituents, the people who sent us here, to make sure we understand how they feel about this. Give them an opportunity to digest its provisions. Let the experts hash over the legal consequences so we know what we're getting into. What is the rush? What is the hurry? You know, I think it's an offense to the representative democracy to rush the most transformative tax policy in over 30 years. Something that's going to reach into every American family and every American business.
Right. Do you think Democrats in Congress are doing a good enough job of finding a place at the table? Do you see any areas where compromise is happening or conversations are happening? Or is this just completely broken down at this point?
Well, I think once the Republicans signaled that they were going to try to pass this without a single Democratic vote and then hand Democratic colleagues a copy of the bill shortly before they were expected to vote on it, when even lobbyists had copies, it's pretty clear that they didn't want to have the kind of bipartisan approach that we've come to expect in major tax legislation, especially the 1986 tax overhaul that we're living with today.
Let's go back a little bit to 1986 and talk about the history behind this as we talk about the biggest overhaul in 30 years. That brings us right back squarely in the mid-80s. Where were you at during that time as far as, that conversation was?
Well, in 1986, I was a young lawyer practicing law in Bridgewater, preparing income tax returns and doing estate planning for farmers and small business owners and regular workers.
And can you put that in context for us today? How in 2017 do we look back at, President Reagan is Democrats control Congress. There's a big compromise. They work together at that point. You see President Reagan working with Congress, Congress working with President Reagan. What happened that now we just don't see that anymore? What's changed?
Yeah, well, I think there are three main differences between the current process and that of 1986, Lori. The first, as I mentioned, is this process has been rushed for no apparent reason except to limit the opportunity for Americans to know what's in the bill. Second, it's being misrepresented as middle-class tax relief when the vast majority of the proposed tax cuts go to the well-off and major corporations and everyone, including major conservative business publications, know that. Finally, there's been no real attempt to reach across the aisles, as you acknowledged. This looks and feels so much different from the 1986 effort, Lori. First of all, in 1986, we were in the midst of the farm crisis, and times were really tough in South Dakota for farmers and the business community. They were all reeling. Another thing is tax rates were much higher. The top end was at 50% at that point. Today, on the other hand, corporations enjoy record earnings and stock prices have hit highs repeatedly, including today, over the last several years. So this is a period of stunning economic growth, but wages remain stagnant and healthcare costs are just devastating regular families and businesses. So the other thing about the 1986 tax law, Lori, was it was bipartisan effort. Congress in that tax law overcame the wishes of the powerful lobbyists and overwhelmingly passed that law, which was seen as a triumph of the people over the special interests. Today, it's just the opposite. This is the triumph of the lobbyists and the major corporations and the wealthy donors over the people. There are a few other points, since you asked. That was an attempt at revenue-neutral tax simplification. The goal was to lower tax rates and close loopholes. The president said he would veto any legislation that was not revenue-neutral. That's an important difference. And something else, Reagan said a tax that places significantly different burdens on taxpayers in similar economic circumstances is not fair. And so he ended the capital gains tax, lowered the rates for everyone, and everyone paid at ordinary income rates. Now, finally, in that 86 bill, unlike today, the standard deduction, the personal exemption, and earned income credit were all expanded, and that resulted in reduced taxes across all income levels, Lori. Vastly different from what we have today. That's why it was bipartisan. That's why it endured.
Let's wrap up. What are your final thoughts on this? What are some of the takeaways for South Dakotans as they watch the week unfold in Washington and reach out to their congressional representatives with questions and comments?
Well, first of all, I just wrote my own opinion with my proposal for tax reform in it. It was published in the Rapid City Journal last Friday, and listeners can view it online if they haven't. But I think we need to look at revenue-neutral tax reform that lowers corporate rates while closing loopholes and allowing corporations to bring money back that's held overseas. Second, we need to close loopholes only the wealthy can access and use the savings to give the middle class and small business families a tax break. After all, our small businesses create about 2/3 of American jobs, and they've had it tough. I've been up and down the main streets of town after town and see how they're struggling. We should think about a mortgage interest credit rather than a deduction, Lori, that allows everyone, including those young families who don't itemize, a 15% credit against taxes against their interest paid so that they can all share in the benefit of owning a home. And then we should increase rather than eliminate the personal exemption. The Republicans don't talk about that. It's a huge issue.
We're going to have to wrap up there. Tim Bjorkman is a Democratic candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives. He wrote a piece for the Rapid City Journal. You can find it at rapidcityjournal.com. We'll put a link up on our website after the program as well.